Blog Talk Radio.
Bobby, you're here again.
Yeah, my doctor told me to reduce stress at work, so I come to Buffalo Wild Wings to eat lunch and watch sports. I get to pick one of seven entrees, like sandwiches and salads, plus one of seven sides.
Well, I like sides.
It's so affordable, I can finally take a vacation.
Where are you going to go?
Here, Tim, here.
Introducing the new B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch Menu, starting at a new low price. Dine in or order takeout weekdays between 11 and 2. Participation and availability may vary. Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and thank you for joining us on Unlimited Realities Radio. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer Mahoney, and we have a very special guest today, best-selling author, Oriya Mountain Dreamer, author of The Call, The Dance, and The Invitation. And today we're going to be discussing the winter solstice, which this year it falls on December 21st. And we're going to be talking a little bit about what the darkest day of the year means and how its effect can be looked at as a way we often go through our shadow side and our dark side of doubts and fears and insecurities, and how we evolve and come out into the light, as in the advent of Christmas. So I want to thank you, Oriya, so much for being on Unlimited Realities. Welcome.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're moving into the season of Christmas, and of course we still have Hanukkah ongoing, and we have several, you know, celebrations this month that I don't believe is any coincidence it falls around the winter solstice.
Yeah.
And I find this topic today really timely. I've been really inundated with a tremendous amount of people struggling this season, and you know, in addition to the economy being challenging, you know, it's a challenging time for many people anyway because of the holidays. And when we're supposed to be up and we're supposed to be happy and we're supposed to be joyful, oftentimes it's really extra pressure for those who are really struggling. And so can you talk to us a little bit about what the winter solstice can really signify and symbolize to us as we move through this period in our lives?
Absolutely. And it's, you know, it's somewhat ironic that given the nature of the time in the the winter solstice in the northern hemisphere, that we do have this culture that is, and this is particularly true in the States to a little lesser degree in Canada, but still there, it's extremely extroverted culture. So it values most the kind of shining times, the times of brightness and light, and is, you know, there's this kind of cheerleading enthusiasm for the light, the light, the light. And, of course, the difficulty with that is that you can't have that all the time. And in fact, it would wear you just completely to a frazzle, which might explain why so many of us are worn to a frazzle, without, you know, some of the inward-turning times, some of the darker times when you get not just insights, but rest, real deep rest, you know, from the times of darkness. I mean, this is, you know, in the northern hemisphere, the time of hibernation for animals when they go into the long, deep sleep. You know, I will say that this is probably the time of year around the winter solstice when I feel most connected to the dream of the ancestors, because I always have this kind of sense of what it was like for our ancestors who did not have electricity. You know, the only artificial light they had was perhaps fire. And, you know, if you were living in a cave, for instance, as the days got shorter and the nights got longer and colder, there would be a kind of instinctual move to a kind of slowing down of everything and everything moving into kind of a hibernation. And
yes,
also many cultures, those cultures, would see it as a time of dreaming. Now here's what's interesting about dreaming. You know, when I'm talking about dreaming, I'm talking about really a kind of inward turning, allowing the imagination to go where it wants, the unconscious to speak to us. When I put this out often, what I hear from people is about a kind of goal-setting process. which is not quite
yes.
the same thing. And I'm not bad-mouthing goal setting, but goal setting is a step after the dreaming, you know, where you're now putting in the concrete plan. And it's indicative of, again, what an extroverted and achievement-oriented culture we have, that people would interpret dreaming as a time to sort of set goals for the next year. When what I'm, you know, inviting in is a kind of more moving into the places in ourselves where shadow material is. And by shadow material, I really just mean aspects of self, the unconscious, that we don't know about. It may be good news, it may be not such good news, but it's not necessarily
right.
dark stuff in the sense of ooh, although certainly we do tuck the kind of ooh knowledge of ourselves down there. But it's also,
sure.
you know, it's a place where we stash our old sorrows that need some attention. Some
yes.
of our fears, right? Things that really do have a huge impact on us without us knowing, because they're in the unconscious. So mostly the winter solstice is in part a great time to invite and make the space for, that would be the catch, because if you're racing around, you can invite material from your unconscious to come up, but you're not going to notice it when it does because you're just running around so much.
Right.
It's also, you know, so I have some questions that I ask sometimes of myself in those periods, and I, you know, when I'm doing sort of a deeper meditation and allowing, one of the questions is, where am I a fundamentalist? You know, because that will point me in the direction of some of my deepest fears about things will come out, and I will discover that I've created absolute rules and laws about things to try and protect myself from those fears of unpredictability. One of the other questions I would ask is, where do I find it difficult to hold an aspect of myself or the other in my heart? And, you know, there's so much political discord and whatnot. All you have to do is think about a family member with whom you disagree vehemently about politics and think about, you know, when they're offering their absolute sense of what's right, how hard do I find it to hold them in my heart, not to remove myself from them, not to call them names internally or externally. You know?
That's a very good check-in point right there.
Yes. So I think what gets raised for us in the darkness is very similar to what would have been for our ancestors, is that we're pushed right up against the facts of reality, which is that in the world we live in, the future is unknowable and unpredictable. That's always true,
mm-hmm.
but I think we feel that more with the lengthening darkness and finding a way to let ourselves be with that. Now, traditionally, in pretty much all cultures, people would do that. They would withstand the darkness, so to speak, together with a circle of community. And it's not that they would, you know, sit in the dark. They would light a fire, and in a sense, what we're talking about metaphorically is seeing things with maybe a little softer light, not the stadium lights,
mm-hmm.
you know, but a candle or a fire that lets us see
right.
a little bit of ourselves in the shadow.
Right. Now, when we're going through this dark part, because everybody does, regardless
mm-hmm.
of if they admit it or not, we all have stuff. And we all have moments where, you know, we're challenged. We're challenged on our beliefs. We're challenged on our thoughts. We're challenged on how regimented we've been in our thinking. And
yeah.
and I loved that question you posed in regard to how much of a fundamentalist am I? Because sometimes we go through life and we don't realize what we've been handed, either from our role models or our parents
mm-hmm.
or society or our peers. And it may not necessarily be our beliefs. It may not be our truth. And so, you know, sometimes that unearthing, that depth of ourselves is necessary, but people really don't, there's a good majority of people who really don't know how to begin that process. And so, you know, going into the darkness or going into the dark, you know, cave of ourself and our heart and our soul mm-hmm. is something a little scary.
Yeah.
And yet, how can we encourage people to not run away from that and actually understand that this is a part of all of us and to move through it in regard to there is going to be a light at the end. You know, there, it's inevitable. There can't be light without dark. So we move through the dark to get to the light, but how can we move through it confidently? How can we move through it knowing if we don't have support, if we don't have, you know, the soul connections that we really can use and utilize in our growth?
And of course, that's one of the sad things. I mean, one of the things I didn't mention is that the solstice really and always has been in the middle of the darkness and also reassurance that the light will return. That's why Christmas is celebrated now. It's about the promise of the sun child, the Christ. And these wonderful stories predate any time posited of when the historical Jesus was. I mean, they come from mythologies all over the world. So, again, our ancestors always had this reminder of, and the light will return. And that's important to know that. And, you know, there are times when we're in our darkest times when that seems like a theory and a pretty flaky theory at that. And that, I think, is when we do lean often into another's faith. You know, we're with somebody who can be with us. The hardest is if people are really isolated and alone. You know, Mother Teresa said that in the West, the spiritual impoverishment of people who were isolated was probably the worst impoverishment and the most difficult to address, because it was hard sometimes to find and connect with folks, you know. So it's a, you know, what I would say for most of us is that we also need to start small. Like, we need to build up our muscle of looking at our own rigidity. And one of the ways to do that is to take your very simple daily kinds of patterns and reverse them. So long as they don't do any harm, do them 180 degrees differently. So, for instance, I'm generally known as being pathologically punctual. You know, I'm always on time. So what I might do is decide that for a week I'm going to be late. I can't tell you how difficult that is for me. And, of course, it erases immediately all kinds of things that are fairly unconscious about what I think about what being on time or being late means. You know, reliable people are on time. People who are good people are reliable. You know, all kinds of beliefs behind this that I don't really think about, but are clearly there when I attempt to do the opposite. One of the big ones is food. You know, people have all kinds of rigid rules around food. And again, without doing yourself harm and poisoning yourself by drinking alcohol all week or something, you just for one week reverse that and see what happens. And you begin to find all these shadow belief systems that you're not actually explicitly advocating, but are clearly there in yourself. So starting small is a good idea. Right, not starting with, you know, my shadow about my mother, just starting with my shadow about being on time. You know, start with the two pathways.
Right, and it's, and I'm sure that it gets a little bit, you know, uncomfortable when you have to reverse 180 degrees because you feel like you're a foreigner in your own body, you know?
Absolutely. And also the temptation, of course, is to explain to everybody. So one of the things about this is don't explain. So in other words, I can't arrive, if I'm doing this, I can't arrive late and say, sorry, but I'm doing this experiment where I'm, you know, and I feel that impulse because
well,
I want
to know. Does anybody ever call you out or question you on it? Like, oh, Raya, you're always so punctual. Why are you 15 minutes late today?
Yeah, and so it would just be, you know, that's the way it worked out. Sorry about that. Of course, generally speaking, it's not a big deal for the other people, right? It's a big deal to me because my pattern is to be on time and on some level to think, not even to think, that's too conscious, but to believe that that says something about me, right? And I would say the reverse, too. If you're habitually late for a week, absolutely commit to being early or on time.
Right.
See what happens then. I've had people do this, actually, and, of course, what comes up for them is they're feeling controlled. They're feeling, you know, compelled by other people's agendas, even though they agreed to meet somebody at a particular time. So it doesn't matter which it is.
And, And there's something you wrote about a few weeks ago that has stayed with me, and I want to bring it up now because I feel like it's timely in regard to this topic. But you wrote about this little exercise that you go through when you're in a stressful situation, in where you breathe through the soles of your feet. Can you talk to us a little bit about that? Because I found that an amazing tool when I'm around somebody who's a little challenging. So, I mean, this is a great exercise, and I think if everyone just could utilize some simple tools, it would be a wonderful process for them.
It's also a great tool if you really are trying to sort of just block out a little bit of time, I mean, really a half an hour where you're, you know, you turn out the lights, you light a candle, and you're just sitting with the darkness. And what's almost inevitably going to arise is some anxiety because things that we've been out running with our constant activity, flipping on the television, whatever it is, are likely to come up. So one of the ways of dealing with anxiety, you know, I love Jungian James Hollis says, you know, one of the tasks of growing up is that you have to be able to tolerate more anxiety, which is a hard sell. But what he's saying is, you know, if you really stay with what is, there will be anxiety. That's part of a human life. And growing up is about not racing away from that. But then we have to learn to tolerate it. And one of the things I learned when I was leading ceremonies, particularly sweat lodge ceremonies, which sometimes can be stressful and intense for people, is to have them imagine that they were breathing in and out the soles of their feet. So, you know, it's preferable if you can put your soles of the feet on the ground or the floor where you are. But even if you can't do that, you can still do it. And you literally just imagine that the life-sustaining oxygen is being breathed up through the soles of your feet and then being exhaled down through the soles of your feet. And generally it helps to imagine that with the earth, whether you're in a city or not, same earth always beneath us, right? And what's remarkable is that it seems almost impossible, and I've never seen it happen yet, to stay in a kind of state of rigid terror and do this simultaneously. Now, sometimes if we're really frightened, it will take a few tries to focus for the full extent of the inhale and the exhale. And for some reason, I think because the feet naturally bring us to ground, it has a bit more of a profound impact on fear than just following your breath in and out of your lungs. I mean, I've done that also, and sometimes that can be very calming. But if there's a real edge of anxiety breathing in and out the soles of your feet, you know, I'll tell you a really quick story. I loved the dark as a child. I am one of these people who finds it very difficult to sleep if the room is not blacked out. I mean, what we know is, just as there are people who need more light on their skin or they have seasonal affective disorder, there are those of us on the other end of the scale who don't go into a very deep sleep if there's any light in the room. My son is like this, and so is my father. It's an inherited trait, very similar to, but on the opposite end of seasonal affective disorder. So I say that because as a child, when most kids are vying for night lights and things, I'm complaining to my mother that I can't sleep because I can see the light under the door and I want it blocked. So, and I love the dark. I spend an enormous time around in places that are dark, in ceremonies, in a sweat lodge. I like it so I can't tell if my eyes are open or closed, same with my bedroom. So all that's a background to say that on one particular night, December 27th, 2008, I went to bed out in the country, was alone in the house, and I was terrified for the first and only time in my life of the dark. Absolutely petrified. And I mean, it was such just not an experience I'd ever had. And I was trying to figure out, am I going crazy? Is this just me? And I called out to the grandmothers, who I often see in my dreams, these group of old women. And they said to me, breathe through the soles of your feet. Now, because I've used this a lot with other people, I was not happy with this. I said, I know what you're doing. Tell me what this is, you know. And they just kept saying, breathe through the soles of your feet. And somewhat miraculously, really, because I was so frightened and I didn't know of what. I wouldn't have imagined I could fall asleep. As soon as I took three breaths in and out of the soles of my feet, I, in fact, fell asleep and woke up the next day. And the first thing that came to my mind, out of partly in the dream and partly not, was the grandmother said, get out of here, meaning get out of this physical place, go into the city. And who knows? I mean, I have lots of thoughts now about what that might have meant. But so it's, you know, the fear of the dark for lots of people is pretty primal. And I think part of them saying to me, get out of here, was that part of what I needed was connection. And I was in a very, very isolated place. And that I did need to connect with other people. I think the hard part for us in this culture around this time of year is when we connect with other people, it's usually, it's kind of party mode. And what we really
right.
need in some ways is to sit with other people. You know, that if so sitting, yeah. and it might just be with one other person, you know, where we do sit in the dark and light one candle, and or we just talk to someone or we connect with them through email or something. And I say that because a lot of people who are often on my Facebook site have a chronic illness. And so going somewhere to meet somebody is not possible. So we do need that connection. You know, we need some kind of connection.
Right.
And if you're with other people and you practice the breathing through the soles of your feet, it's just so much easier to do.
Right. And it also, it's amazing what the calming effect. I mean, it's almost instantaneous.
Yeah.
The part that I am really hearing a lot from people is how to maintain or at least a peaceful place, because not only is the anxiety so high, but the worry thoughts and the fear thoughts. And it's almost as if this little ugly gremlin has taken over and, you know, conjured up these fear thoughts in their mind. And so it's very difficult for them to get out of that thought processing. What do you suggest in regard to, like, okay, we're in the deep, we're in the dark, we're in the sludge, we're in the muck, and we're feeling it. And there may be a necessary crying bout we have to go through, or there may be a rebel yell we have to let out, or something to release it on a physical aspect from our voice. But is there something that we could suggest to the viewers, the listeners, that could help them in regard to stopping the crazy chatter, to maybe help them get a grip?
Well, sometimes, you know, the chatter, the worry chatter, just is taking over our lives. And what we don't want to do is try and repress it and cut it off, because then where did it go? And it will come out in weird little ways, right? So then we'll blow our top at somebody in a store or something and think, where did that come from? You know, and that's where it came from. So one of the things, especially when people are going through something, you know, that really is worrisome. They've lost their job, or their marriage is falling apart, or someone is dying or has died. Like these, you know, very real things that, in fact, raise all kinds of worries and concerns. One of the things I suggest is that they allocate some time for it. So they say to themselves, okay, from 3 to 4 in the afternoon or on my lunch break, whatever it is, I'm going to commit to just really being with those thoughts and sitting with them. And when they come up in the rest of the day to say, oh, later, you know, 3 o'clock, like you have an appointment with those thoughts. You're going to allow them some space, but you're not going to allow them to take over the whole day. For me, the easiest way to do this, just set aside some time and write them down. So during that hour, let's say, when I'm going to let myself really hear those voices, I write. And the advantage of that is sometimes I think the thoughts come up again and again because some part of us is almost afraid we're going to forget some reality we have to deal with. So writing them down can be helpful because it's like, no, I'm not going to forget them because there they are. They're in a nice little list over there.
Right, that's a great tool.
And so, you know, limiting the time in the day, but giving it some time. Now, what usually happens when I do this and I sit down for my time and I let it rip on the page, you know, about, oh, my gosh, what happens if, you know, all that kind of thing. is that it actually comes out pretty quickly. In other words, it doesn't take the hour, and I can write it, and then I can just sort of sit with it and ask myself, what is it I'm really afraid of here? What's beneath that? Because there are usually very fundamental fears beneath those things, about being unlovable, about being alone, about, you know, the world is a big and scary place and I am small, you know, and again, not so much to get rid of them, but just to see where are those things. And sometimes they'll lead back right to a memory from childhood, and we'll see, that's the bell that fear is now ringing. That's the old bell that's ringing. And sometimes that doesn't happen. But most importantly is to kind of, the worst thing you could do, though, is to say, I'm going to do this, and then not do it. Because now your psyche is going, okay, I'm not buying that wait till 3 o'clock thing. I'm going to try and, you know, worry about this all day long, because you're not going to keep your commitment to let me have free reign for an hour. So you've promised it to yourself. You really need to give it to yourself. You need to set that time aside and let it go. And I would suggest not just before you go to bed, you can do it sometimes first thing in the morning, but it's kind of nice if it's in the middle of the day where, you know, there's a way to sort of do it, contain it, and then move into some other aspect of your life.
Right, because there's a part of us that once we make a commitment to ourselves to do something, and then, you know, say we let it slack or we let it slide, then there's that self beat up, you know, that we do to ourselves, and that's never fun, because who's worse to us ourselves than ourselves? I mean, honestly, I don't think anyone is a worse critic than ourselves to ourselves. So, that really allows. That's a wonderful tool you just provided the audience, and that is something that they can really use. And basically, it's something that it comes from their heart and their soul. So it's not something somebody can teach you to do. It has to come from your own inner voice and your own stuff.
Yeah.
But in getting it out on paper, you know, it also sometimes you can look at it and it doesn't look as scary as it does when it's kind of milling around in your head. You know,
and one of the things I'll sometimes do with this is the poem, The Invitation, that starts, "It doesn't interest me what you do for a living," was based on a writing exercise given by David White, who had written a poem that started off, "It doesn't interest me if there's one God or many gods." So I will sometimes use that format with this. So if I've written down a fear about economics, let's say, you know, I'm worried about how I'm going to have enough money or whatnot, then I will play with it. And this does become play, believe it or not, with "it doesn't interest me if I have enough money or not, what I really want," and see what comes. And that's one way of sort of taking it deeper. You know, maybe what I really want is just not to know I'm alone with the challenges in front of me. You know, or what I really want is to know my sons will be okay. Or, you know, so it's not to get definitive answers, and it's not to go into denial about what we are worried about, but it's to see, is there something underneath this? You know,
right? Because there always is.
Yeah.
There's always
usually.
There's always something. It's layered. You know.
Yeah.
Well, that in regard to. Coming into the light. Now as we're moving through this this dark side of ourselves, and we know in our consciousness that the light is there, is there a way that in writing it down and breathing through the soles of our feet and really honoring our pain, that we can just kind of have more of a selfish time for ourselves and maybe recognize that this maybe a time where we do need to be, you know, focusing upon ourselves and not outside of ourselves for others, which this season does call for. You know, this season is the call of giving to others. And sometimes if we haven't given, well, all the time, if we haven't given to ourselves and we haven't taken care of us, you know, there's no giving to others. So it's real important to, you know, kind of develop a healthy selfishness in regard to loving ourselves and honoring ourselves and taking
that
time.
That self-care that really deep self-care and trying to find a moment to even know what that would look like for you. You know, what would real self-care look like? And it can be very simple. You know, at a certain point in my life, because of chronic fatigue, it meant buying a pre-stuffed turkey. You know.
Oh, there we go. That's great. And not feeling guilty about it, you know?
Exactly.
It's making life simpler.
So, I mean, it's different for everyone, you know? And I think about particularly all the millions of women who spend the majority of a day or days in the kitchen, you know? And is there anything more wonderful than the day after when all those leftovers are there?
Right,
you know,
and you don't have to do anything.
Days. That's right. So, you know, I had a friend once, I actually have a couple of friends who kind of go into seclusion from the winter solstice to New Year's. And I've always thought, oh, great time to do that because of the darkness. But, of course, it also corresponds with a time when families tend to get together. And so that's, you know, not something people want
to
give up either. So some kind of balance. I think the important thing is, you know, when we put a seed in the ground, you have to take a seed and put it in darkness. And what literally
happens
and
O'Reilly, I don't want to cut you off. We do have like 9 seconds. I want the audience to buy your book, The Invitation. I want to thank you so much for being my guest on Unlimited Realities. And your wisdom is priceless. God bless you, and thank you so much for being on. Everyone have a beautiful, blessed week.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us on Unlimited Realities Radio. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer Mahoney, and we have a very special guest today, best-selling author Oriah Mountain Dreamer, author of The Call, The Dance, and The Invitation. And today we're going to be discussing the winter solstice, which this year it falls on December 21st. And we're going to be talking a little bit about what the darkest day of the year means and how its effect can be looked at as a way we often go through our shadow side and our dark side of doubts and fears and insecurities, and how we evolve and come out into the light, as in the advent of Christmas. So I want to thank you, Oriah, so much for being on Unlimited Realities. Welcome.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're moving into the season of Christmas, and of course we still have Hanukkah ongoing, and we have several, you know, celebrations this month that I don't believe is any coincidence it falls around the winter solstice.
Yeah.
And I find this topic today really timely. I've been really inundated with a tremendous amount of people struggling this season, and you know, in addition to the economy being challenging, you know, it's a challenging time for many people anyway because of the holidays, and when we're supposed to be up and we're supposed to be happy and we're supposed to be joyful, oftentimes.
Hey, it's Flo, and this is my impression of a drill instructor directing a musical. Hot. Get those tap heels in line and let me see those jazz hands. Are you bundling your home and auto insurance through Progressive? Can you hear me through those sequins?
Bundle your home and auto through Progressive and save.
Left, 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 and step off change.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates. Home insurance provided and serviced by other select insurers.
Tired at work today? You need a 5-hour energy shot. Didn't sleep too well last night? You need a 5-hour energy shot. Energy for work, energy for fun, even some energy for the gym. If you're tired from too much lunch, try something that packs a punch. A great tasting 5-hour energy shot. You'll feel alert, energized, and ready to go. Now's the time for 5-hour energy. For more information, go to 5hourenergy.com.
I know. Well, you have to thank her, too, because a lot of the drama comes from the ex-wife, you know, or the ex-husband, one of the two. But when you have two, you know, mature adults, you can really see the outcome and see that this is better for everyone. And handling that way, if you're better than the kids, this is what you have. And she's moved on, and he's okay with it. So it's like, but a very open person, because somebody who's only like 10 years in to find out something about the past, you know, this is somebody who's very open book, very good reading. And he also looks like he may have been a little bit of a rebel when he was a kid, a teenager. So he's a little bit of, but he's not, he knows he's street.
So Rachel Yes, she does need you. She needs you a lot. How old is she? 13? 15. Okay. Are the other girls 13? Okay. So, Olivia is, first of all, there's an innocence about her that is really sweet. And it's really hard to learn. And that teeth is almost looking like a human. So she's happy to really spend it, you know. Wow. Yeah, she is. She deals with her emotions. I would say that she's very emotional, very sensitive, so she didn't feel the emotion. What I would suggest for you, because she's craving a woman. She's the one that they all want someone, but because of her age and where she was, she actually, could prevent them. Okay. Yeah, because she's going to bond with you a lot of ways. And she's, it's going to be you over the world. So, she's going to take comfort and security with you. She's going to feel better around you. She may be a little bit extra immediately with him. So, but a lot of development is a big intervention. So it's, it was an extra, it was extra love. And any extra love for the woman. And it looks like, they may stay in touch with them. And that's okay. I don't see himself. It looks like he put him in his place. Yeah, he did. But it looks like he put him in his place. And it does look like he understands it. Regardless of how it's actually going to be. Yeah, it's like taking a toy back to school. He is hypersensitive. And it's not hypersensitive, like, really,
Around then. And he looks good. Dark. few years and then fucking buy, like everyone else has to do. and half people I've known 35 fucking years for $10,000, let alone $100,000 or $200,000. I don't understand people like this. Well, where the fuck do they get off? I wouldn't have the audacity to say that. Are you kidding me?